Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burnt Orange Nation. You can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burntorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who's never felt closer to Dr. Mama Finkley, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
It was real, you know, like sometimes you forget when you're so inside of something, you forget how great it is. You can worry about the minutia. You can try to change small details of life, and sometimes living in Texas, as I have done for the past 30 years and change, you forget, you know, there's things that could be better. There's things you wished were better, things you wish were changed. But seeing someone like Mama Fink come into Austin and walk into the honest to God marvel that is HEB, our great chairman of pandemic response, And see just her amazement at it compared to the options that they have reminds you the small things that are taken for granted. When you come to Austin, you're not just getting first-rate education. You're getting all of the benefits of the lifestyle that the city of Austin and, more importantly, the state of Texas provides.
The one thing that my wife and I always like lament every time we go visit and then have to come back is like when you hit the HEB line on I-35 going north, it's like, our last chance to stop in. Anything we need before we go? Anything at all? It's so tough. Mm-hmm. There's no replacement for, the best grocery chain in the country. But we're not here to talk about groceries and the top grocery store in the country. We're here to talk about the top baseball team in the country. Texas took on the Rice Owls, which you could probably get both Rice and Owls if you needed them at a Super HEB, but that's neither here nor there. We'll talk about baseball. We'll probably at least spend some time talking about basketball because, well, they're paying us to do it even though we may not want to. We'll down the 40. A lot to down this week and down the 40. A lot of action on the 40 acres. We'll obviously have some burnt orange lenses, a lot of non-campus Longhorns in business, and we'll close the show out with some bang the drum. So Texas, the king stays the king, taking on a team with more baseball national championships than Texas Tech. The Rice Owls, number one Texas baseball, absolutely dominates what's not a bad Rice team, but they're definitely not on Texas's level. 36-3 cumulatively over the weekend. Kyle, there's a lot to talk about. We could talk about the pitching. We could talk about the hitting, but I put it out there on Twitter and fans from all over the globe got upset at us. But, like, Texas is rolling out an incredibly dominant team. And when it's all said and done, this could be a dogpile, an Omaha-type team. This could be a all-timer team for Texas. And they looked every bit of that part in all three games this weekend.
The reason we always say, right, like, you get to Omaha and then, you know, the chance to win a title begins. You have to get there. And I think there's two seasons in the season. There's getting there, and then there's winning it. Because once you get there, any team can win. It's a wild time. It's a tough thing. The best team doesn't always walk away and win. But David Pierce has done a great job in his time at Texas. He's done a great job with getting the most out of teams, switching between ace, arm, small ball. But when you have a stacked team that's already good, like I'm very scared what the most out of this team looks like. Is it 70 runs in a weekend while giving up zero? I don't know. But like legitimately, and joking aside, I think that this is probably the best roster that he's had. And they were a few outs away from, you know, winning or playing for a national championship last year. So, you know, assuming no injuries, nothing crazy, like this should be a team that at least gets to Omaha. We know that it getting there, and then it's a whole season number two, postseason baseball. You know, then you have to win that season. And so I don't want to tap anyone, you know, crown anyone champions, but you know, this was the number one team in the country, all the hype in the world. Texas fandom over the past few years was ready for like a letdown or something, not to be perfect, or to eke out, you know, a couple of 8-5 wins or something, you know, just like for something to go terribly askew. And for the first time in what feels like Texas history, nothing went askew.
It's a good feeling, Kyle. It's a good feeling when you're set up for disappointment. And again, there still could be a lot of disappointment. There's a lot of baseball left to play. And being a Texas fan is sometimes like playing... It's almost like watching my son play the game Concentration, where the anxiety builds as he puts pieces in, more and more pieces go in, and the anxiety builds slowly, and then all of a sudden there's just this massive moment of, oh crap, let down, and I'm frustrated. But that's not what we got from Texas. Let's go game by game quickly, because we've got a lot to cover today. Pete Hansen did Pete Hansen things on Friday night, pitched a 6 shutout innings, gave up 3 hits, only walked 1, struck out 8. The bullpen came in big as well. It was an absolutely dominant performance from the pitching staff on Friday night, which is what we expected. And if you want to go back to our baseball preview last week, this is kind of what we anticipated seeing.
Getting a shutout in opener, perfect. Can't start any better. Getting, you know, Pete Hansen, the Friday guy, looking like Pete Hansen, who no one could touch last year, you know, great. Like, you wanted everything there. They didn't show a lot of power in the first, and we'll talk about the second game immediately, but they showed good starting pitching, good bullpen, and having at least one or two guys really step up. In this game, it was Silas Ardwin, who went 3-for-4 with 3 RBIs, had a solo homer, a 2-run double, just looked like... we said he was one of the best catchers in the country in our season preview, and focused mainly on his offense, and basically said if he can swing the bat, then he will undoubtedly be the best catcher in the country. And maybe, you know, Silas, we know you listen to this. Thanks for always supporting the pod. Maybe, you know, there was a little motivation there, and he wanted to show Gerald and myself. I presume that's the reason, you know, anyone would do anything, was to show us. And you know, good start there for brother Silas. He also threw a runner out who decided to dare try to steal on him, because you don't do that ever. And so, yeah, he just kind of had the complete start to the game, and I couldn't have been happier, because, you know, I've said many times on this podcast, former catcher, I watch the catchers. That's who quarterbacks the game. And so a great pitcher and a great catcher, everything else falls into place.
I mean, what more do you need? I mean, 7 runs were scored, so like they got way more than they needed with that pitching performance. But it's just, again, Texas looked every bit the part of the dominant juggernaut team we anticipated, and that carried over into Saturday. Tristan Stevens, again, and Tristan Stevens is going to be the media MVP once again this year. Like, the dude is just, like, there's no lengthy time between pitches. He 67 pitches in 6 innings, gave up 4 hits, struck out 3, 2 walks. Like, the guy is efficient. Very, very efficient. And as you know, you and I haven't been in the press box in a minute, but you and I do this regularly, and we try to watch as many games as we can while also maintaining a healthy marriage and personal lives. It's helpful when Tristan Stevens can be that efficient on the mound, and that's his deal. And it worked once again, and he handed it off to the bullpen, and they shut it down from there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there will be media writers telling their kids and grandkids about Tristan Stevens, no matter how he concludes his Texas career, just because he is the sports writer's most beloved player. Like Gerald said, that efficiency is great when you have to write on deadline. But yeah, I mean, you're right. It's he had 2 walks, which is high for him on this one. Usually, you know, he's 0-1. Couple Ks, couple, you know, a lot of ground outs, you know, a couple flyouts, and not a lot of danger. The most dangerous play that could have extended innings was he let a deep one go to the wall where, you know, t- Texas defense, we've said, their pitching's great. Their hitting's really, really good, but their defense is absolutely elite as well last year and looks to be very good this year. Doug Hoda moving into center field and picking up where he left off, connecting to Mitchell Daly on a relay, who then turned around and pinged a perfect one to Silas, who tagged a runner out at home for the only
play of the weekend, potentially.
Honestly, I mean, it was perfect, right? Like, that home runs are awesome. You know, strikeouts are, we love to watch them, but that is an execution of multiple Texas players being inch perfect, timing precise, and getting that out. I mean, that's, you love to see that as a fan of baseball. And so again, when your defense is firing, your pitching obviously is good and your hitting is good. I mean, again, that's why people have this team number one. And after three games, and after this second game, there was nothing that said, oh, that's could be a weakness. 15-1, I'll take it.
It was the perfect dominant game from a number one team. You really can't be upset with it. And then dovetailing into Sunday, you know, 14-2. Tanner Witt, proud of him, got his first career start, 5 innings, 5 hits. He's the only starter of the weekend to give up an earned run. That's a little, no, I'm just joking. I wasn't even going to try to continue that joke. But like, and this is what we talked about, Kyle, in the preview, that Texas had some inconsistencies pitching on Sunday. And seeing the Sunday pitcher throw the junk that Tanner Witt throws, like, this is Arnold Schwarzenegger and Terminator 1 style pitching staff, where they're just walking through and mowing down folks without regard. And when you get to Sunday and the guy's throwing big league junk at you, like, there's very few opportunities for a letdown in that Sunday game.
It's easy to forget this was Tanner Witt's first ever career start, and he gave up a solo home run in the first inning of his first start. I kind of like that. Like, a little bit of adversity, again, against Rice, who is just, no offense to them, they have a new coach trying to rebuild a program, but just is not on the level of Texas. This was probably the greatest chance to face a little adversity, and so it came to our Sunday pitcher, who, you know, has big league aspirations and big league stuff, gave up that home run and then shut him down for the next, you know, 15 batters or so, 14 batters. And so, you know, good on Tanner Witt. I just want to point out, in all of these games, right, I think the relief pitching was phenomenal. You talked about, you know, only run given up by a starter. Of course, they only gave up three. They gave up one at the end of game two, right at the end in the ninth. But, I mean, you had Lucas Gordon coming in, a big prospect, throwing a perfect game. Andre Duplantier looked amazing in that second game. Two strikeouts in his one inning. I mean, looks to be back and just a massive weapon. We saw Harrison and Blair, guys who didn't get huge, you know, kind of touted and are just arms number 8, 9, and 10 or something in this ridiculously talented bullpen that we have. But then you have, you know, Chrysler LeBaron coming in, throwing 99 miles an hour and a 91 mile per hour slider. And then, oh, by the way, because it's Sunday and he hasn't thrown at all, let's go ahead and put in Aaron Nixon to give him some work. And, you know, even though it was not a save opportunity, threw a scoreless ninth, and showed that ninth innings when he's there are foregone conclusions, right? And so it's just, it is an embarrassment of riches more than anything probably on this team, as far as a strength against every opponent they'll face, is if you get them out of their starters, get deep into the bullpen on a Saturday or on a Sunday, they have so many arms and so much talent. Their guys number 7, 8, 9, 10 have big league stuff.
It'd have been weird if David Pierce came out of the first weekend of the year and didn't let Aaron Nixon go to the bump. Like, you have to let your closer at least come out and warm up his arms. And we can't talk about the Sunday game without talking about Ivan Melendez hitting the ball literally 1,000 feet.
Like, that's right.
Thousands of feet in the air. 2 for 4, 6 RBI, 2 walks. Both of those two were absolute bombs. Like, bombs, bombs, bombs. You cannot say it any other way. If he gets some protection at the plate, if the guy hitting behind him can actually be a hitter and doesn't let teams pitch around him, like, he could be a shoo-in for many Players of the Year nominations with the way that he's hitting already.
Yeah, and look, Texas hadn't had a home run. If you wanted to come into Sunday and say, what is the weakness of the team? What haven't they done? Well, they hadn't. They'd hit some doubles and had some extra base hits, but they hadn't had any deep ones. And, you know, Melendez went ahead and remedied that with some just absolute monster shots. There was the stat that 38 players have cleared that center field monster. The batter's eye was raised from 20 to 28 feet last year. So he's hit all of his three that he's hit over the monster over the 28, the full footage. And this third one of his career after two last year made him the only player to ever put three over that monster. So, I mean, the guy is historically powerful with the bat. And you're right, Gerald. He could just, you know, be in those postseason teams. If you know, one game a series, he's getting 500-foot shots. He'll be on the national kind of radar with no Major League Baseball. There were MLB accounts tweeting about him. It seemed like everyone associated with college baseball was tweeting about him. You know, he Fox and ESPN properties. He definitely captured the attention of the nation with those giant shots, and it certainly doesn't hurt. My favorite thing about this Texas baseball team with some great walk-up music is the home run music. When Ivan Melendez hit those home runs, they had queued up My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. And somehow nothing goes harder than trotting the bases with My Heart Will Go On. I did not expect that, but it is exactly what I needed.
You know what's still going on? That last home run he hit. I don't know if it's landed yet. That ball will go on. No, Trey Faltini had himself a weekend as well. Hit for the cycle in the weekend, including two doubles, a triple, and his first home run of the season. Salazar Duan and Trey Faltini accounted for 30% of the runs that were batted in the weekend. Kyle, the baseball team showed out, and the fans absolutely supported them. And
kudos to everyone who listened to this, who's a fan who showed up or wanted to show up. I know sometimes it's tough to get to Austin if you're not there, but for the folks who showed out, 21,580 across three games breaks the opening weekend record at the Dish. 1990 series of Arizona State was the previous record at just under 2,100. So kudos to all of you. I'm sure there's a pretty massive crossover between our millions of listeners and the 21,000 who showed up. But no, truly, they had a show put on for them, right? 28 walks, 11 extra base hits. There was a good hitting show. You got to see some, like we said, major arms. I just think, you know, we talk about a great defensive team and great defensive guys, and when Arduan and Faltini are your guys driving in runs, it's like this is a complete, well-rounded team, and you should get out for midweek games. You should get out for Sunday games. There's not going to be a bad day to see this team, because if it's a bad opponent, you're going to get to see some future stars and some really incredible players. If it's a really, really good matchup, you're going to get to see some guys play at their highest level. And so it's just good baseball all the way around at the Dish this year, and I like to see we're smashing records because we're the number one team. You should be supporting them, and I love that the Texas fans came out in force.
I'm really glad that these teams are getting the support. The basketball was disappointing this weekend, but the support that these non-football teams have been getting as of late has been up to the level of expectation that the fans held them to, and that's really all that we ask for. Next up for the Longhorns, traveling to Texas A&M Corpus Christi, beating those Island Aggies before welcoming the Alabama Crimson Tide to the Dish Falk Field.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Now, we've got some good news and some bad news as we talk about Texas basketball, who are holding steady at number 20 in the country. They managed to outlast OU in Norman 80-78, but once again, were unable to get it done against Texas Tech. This one was a little more competitive than the last one, however, 61-56. Trey Mitchell missed actually both of those games due to personal reasons. No updates on that. He's still not with the team, but he hopefully, our thoughts and prayers are with him, whatever's going on, Trey. We hope that you can get what you need and get what you need done, and we'll be here when you're ready. But it was an overtime game in Norman to cap off the season sweep for the Longhorns. Timmy Allen was once again the big show, but Andrew Jones did what Andrew Jones does against OU and absolutely refused to lose that basketball game.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wild, right? Andrew Jones is good. He's great. He's been great for a lot of years on campus. But the way this that he's played against OU in his career versus how he's played against every other team, which he's very good. I won't take credit. Will Bazer did the work on looking this up. But he's averaging almost 4.5 points more per game against OU than every other opponent. Plus 8 from percentage from deep. Plus 7%. Better from the free throw line, over 2.5 rebounds better, and almost a half a steal better a game. Basically, when he sees the crimson and creme, he is locked in like literally a bull seeing red. And I could not love him more for everything and anything and his whole career and his story. But the way he hates OU so deeply and passionately, man, I love it.
You and I have our own reasons for loving Andrew Jones, but combine that with like everything that man has overcome with his absolute and abject, I think he just like is fueled by hatred. Like, I think he's such a nice guy, but he has that look in his eye against OU where it's like, I hate you and I refuse to lose to you. And so absolutely, it was just another incredible game for them. Christian Bishop also did his thing, 16 points, 5 of 6 from the floor, made all 6 of his free throws. Marcus Carr had a good Marcus Carr game. We'll talk about a bad Marcus Carr game here in just a minute. First overtime game of the season. Texas, I think the biggest difference for Texas in this was taking care of the basketball. They only turned the ball over 9 times in that contest. 5 of them were Elijah Harkless, who might be one of the best defenders in the conference. Unfortunately, he will be out the rest of the year due to injury. But that dude was just in, like, it was a combination of like of white on rice and like a mosquito at a picnic. Like, you can't, just could not get rid of him.
Yeah, Harkless might hate playing Texas as much as Andrew Jones hates playing OU, and I kind of love that. Like, he legitimately also plays his best games when he plays Texas. It was unfortunate that after the game, or I guess a day or two after the game, it was ruled that he was going to be out for the remainder of the season, which does hurt probably their tournament chances, and if they do get into the tournament, their chances to go on, because OU, while a good team by the rest of the country standards, is a little bit lower in the Big 12 because there's some talent. And again, if you're making a decision on a bubble team and it's OU without Harkless, that's a tough pick. But yeah, this was Texas's chance to go to overtime this year, which surprised me. This was their first one, and they won it out, even with tough play from Goldwire, from Harkless, from some OU guys who were trying to will them to victory. Texas was able to gut it out, and they've lost a lot of their close ones. You think to Seton Hall, you think to some of the early games where it was close and they couldn't muster it. And even though they tried to give Tennessee away, they've won against Kansas. They've won against OU. They've been able to do some things late in this one in overtime in particular, where they got a couple stops and shot 70% in the last frame. And so, you know, that it seems like the past 2 weeks it's been Kansas and OU in the beginning of the week, and then a bad game at the weekend, and that's 50-50. And maybe that's Big 12 basketball, right? Maybe it's hard to do it back to back on these tough defense, tough high energy, energy sucking games. But you know, similar as the Kansas win, I thought this was a great win, and this tells me as much about the upside and what this team could do in the tournament with their kind of some grit and some chance to back against the wall, still make winning plays.
Yeah, I think we saw that against OU, and it was starting, again, we talked about it last week. It felt like Texas was trying to hit their stride and try to hit their stride in the right moments. And then we saw what bad Texas looked like against Texas Tech. Texas went on a really big run today. They were actually down big early, went on a big run late in the first half to tie things up, and then went from the 3-minute mark in the first half to the 14 and a half minute mark in the second half. That's 10 full game minutes. Felt like 16 years without a field goal. And that was the story of the game, really. At that point, Tech was able to build some cushion, build some pad, and Texas was just unable to overcome it. And thanks in part to hitting just 8 shots in the second half. Like, it was just an ugly offensive performance from Texas all around.
Yeah, and you saw some limitations to that Texas offense. I mean, how many times have we said on this podcast, if you're playing the efficiency type game, tough defense, limit offensive possessions for both teams, you better convert on yours. And when you shoot 28%, when you make 8 field goals in the total second half, that's tough to do. And this is a game where they took certain players away. I mean, credit first of all to Tech and Mark Adams and their defense. The way that we credited Beard for taking Abaji out of the Kansas game plan, it felt like they took Marcus Carr out. And when you take Marcus Carr out of the Texas game plan, again, he had 16 points the game before against OU and looked good in some clutch spots. When you take him out and, you know, Marcus Carr and Christian Bishop, who each had 16 points the game before, combined for 0-11 in the game, no made field goals. You know, that's credit to Tech's defense, right? They made it hard, but Texas did, when they didn't have their initial, which was Carr being able to get the offense going and Carr really being unable to beat his man and get the kind of the defense in that rotation, right? Like Texas, when Devin Askew's on the court, there are limitations. He's not looking to shoot. He's sometimes is a little messy with the ball, but he beats his man. And you saw ball movement, and you have with other guys who've been able to get to the paint, or when Carr's been able to do it, and a defense is in rotation scrambling to shooters, you get open looks, you get good shots. And when that's taken away and Texas isn't running, and so they're not getting those easy shots and they're only choosing to do half court kind of offense against Tech is number two right now in Ken Pom's defense. I would be hard pressed to think there's a chance that they're not number one. They're that good on defense. And so when they kind of strangle you like that and Carr can't do it, I mean, it took some Herculean individual play from a couple of the Texas guys who were here before who, you know, really wanted to win this one badly. And again, that's Andrew Jones. That's Ramey, especially in the first half. Cunningham made some winning plays, like even Febris, right? Like was doing some things. I think it took some big individual efforts to even keep this one close, because Texas played bad enough that they could have been ran out of the gym.
Yeah. And I think the stat that's the most telling for me, and the one that Chris Beard probably kept him up at night after this game, was Texas was good on the offensive boards, grabbed 16 offensive rebounds, 6 second chance points. Like, that is the one that, like, just screams at me. Like, if you grab 16 offensive rebounds, you absolutely should be in double digits, if not 15 points-ish off of second chance points. Like, you get fouled going up, or you get, like, something. And that was one of the things that I struggled with watching this game, is that Texas got into the bonus early in the second quarter and then just stopped attacking the basket. Like, force them to make a call or take an easy bucket. Like, force them to foul you. And that, to me, was frustrating. And that's part of the Texas Tech no middle defense. Like, we get it. We saw that last year. That's part of what they do. But, like, you've got to get aggressive, and you've got to force these Big 12 officials, who suck in every sport, we know that, but you've got to force them to, like, take the whistle out of their doggone pocket and make a call. Force them to call. It's either going to be a charge or a block. And let's be really honest with you, like, here's hoping Texas gets at least some sort of home cooking. Tech, on the other hand, out-rebounded Texas by 1 on the offensive boards, but got 15 second chance points. Like, that, to me, that dichotomy right there is the game in and of itself. Essentially the same number of offensive rebounds, Texas Tech got 2.5 times the number of second chance points. That, to me, tells the entire story of the game.
Nail on the head. You're absolutely right, Gerald. That is the difference, right? I think it was a 5-point game. It was ostensibly a 3-point game, right? Like, that should have, I think it was at the end, a 3-point chance for Texas in the last minute, right? So this, a 3-point game, a 1-2 possession game, and you're talking about 9 points right there just off offensive rebounds, Texas, again, not getting any of the transition points. Like, that's your easy baskets. That's your easy money. And when you're not doing any of the stuff that's the easy stuff, I mean, they were okay from the line, 13-17. Maybe you make 1 or 2 more of those. It gets a little interesting, but pretty good, I guess. But you're leaving easy stuff out there, basically, and against a team like Tech, which makes everything difficult. Like, I mean, Tech fans make it difficult to have the internet because they're just so, you know, unintelligent on it. Lubbock makes it difficult to enjoy life if you're in it. And Tech defense makes it difficult to be an offense, right? So, I mean, Texas Tech is an institution that was founded on making things difficult for everybody, including their own people. But no, I mean, I will say one thing that's very difficult is stopping Bryson Williams. He's a guy who Texas didn't have an answer for. I don't know that Trey Mitchell just instantly is that everything is different with him there. He just looked like when they wanted to get him the ball, and he got, I think, the first 4 points of the second half just by being big, being strong in the middle and getting a ball dumped into him when Texas, you know, either on a pick and roll, couldn't rotate over, or he just, you know, out-muscled his man. But it looked like that was a thing that strength and nastiness inside, and then getting scoring from the guys you don't hear about. Clarence Noldoni, I think his name is, had 14 off off the bench, and I think he scored like 14 all season. You know, he's just not a good player. He's really not, which is why him talking all the mess, like, give it to him. Like, he's a bag of certain kinds, but, you know, give him that chance that he did it, and Texas players didn't like it, but go shut him up, right? But, you know, Texas didn't necessarily get that from a guy. There was no Texas player. I mean, I guess Brock Cunningham would be the closest thing, had a good game, but it's like there wasn't just that, who's that, you know, ooh, this guy's going to have a night, you know, and it felt like that, again, was the difference where Tech could get it from multiple places and places you maybe didn't expect.
I'll tell you, like my dad told me when I got mad after a Pee Wee football game, if you don't like him talking mess, don't let him beat you. And that's like the moral of the story. Like, if you don't want him to talk mess, don't let him beat you. So Texas takes just its second home loss of the year. Weirdly enough, Kansas State, the other one, which just seems super weird in hindsight. Texas falls to 8-6 for conference play after dropping their second game to Tech. Currently sitting at fourth in conference and look pretty entrenched there. Closing out the season, they've got TCU on Wednesday and then West Virginia over the weekend. And then the last two games, last game, Texas basketball game in the drum on against Baylor on the 28th. And then they close out the regular season at Fogg, going for the season sweep of the Jayhawks in March. So now's the part of the show where we go around the rest of the campus and we highlight all of the incredible things that happened on campus. A bunch of them happened. And we down the 40, starting with incredible things. Number 14, women's basketball absolutely takes the boots to number 6, Iowa State, 73-48. I don't know why I love beating Iowa State so much, but it just feels so, so good. And then head to Morgantown and walk out with a victory, 68-57, pushing their winning streak to 4. Texas snapped a 5-game winning streak of the Cyclones with the 25-point win there and just absolutely dominant performance. Again, another Vic Schaefer love letter game.
Yeah, especially the third quarter where they outscored them 22-9. This was everything Vic wanted, right? They took a really good offense. This was the Vic Schaefer defense game, right? He held Iowa State team that is averaging 78.8 points per game, 11th best in the nation, held them 30 points, 31 almost, under their season average. I mean, that's just amazing. It was great defense, but Texas won the turnover battle 19-10, won the rebounding advantage, won in scoring off the bench. I thought this was just a really good game for them. And Rory Harmon's a player who you can run out of accolades for how good she's playing as a freshman. Like, I just want to pause and remind everyone, Vic Schaefer despises playing freshmen. Like, you have to be so good as a freshman. Like, he hates it when his freshmen are good because he can't yell at them. You know, like, he does not trust freshmen. And the fact that his point guard, Rory Harmon, is a true freshman and is the best player on the team right now and just going off night in, night out. She had a game-high 20 points on 9-14 shooting, 2-3 from deep. She had 9 assists in this one and became just the 7th Texas freshman in school history to eclipse 100 assists on the season. So she's scoring it. She's passing it. She's doing it all. And again, playing the defense that Vic wants or you don't see the court, right? So Rory Harmon just been electric here the past few games.
We always have to shout out our friend Audrey Warren, who also continued her streak of incredible play coming off the bench. 16 points, 7 of 12 shooting, 4 boards, and 4 steals. Texas, with the sweep of Iowa State, accounts for, we'll call it 66% of Iowa State's conference losses. And again, feels great to beat Iowa State. West Virginia, similar story, 67-58. It was the second quarter this time, though, for Texas, outscoring them 22-13. That basically just created the cushion for the rest of the game. And I'm just going to step aside and let Kyle gush about Rory Harmon a little more.
That's right. This one almost, last game was almost a triple-double with 20-9. This one 19-8 on the glass, 7 assists as well, getting inching close to a triple-double there. There were some good play from some other players. Deanna Gaston and Audrey Warren again were great. Aaliyah Mathura and Jaron Taylor put in 8. I want to call out Shea Holly, right? A player who, again, as a freshman, really didn't play. She's from the Austin area, was a good recruit. Really didn't play a ton as a freshman. Has bought in and really doing the Vic kind of things and has worked her way really solidly into the rotation. She gets out and runs and kind of puts up 8 a night. A lot of those coming in transition, plays good defense. Like, just like you see players when it clicks, when the Vic ball kind of clicks. And it almost feels like for this whole team right now, playing Vic Schaefer defense, something about that win in Lubbock for the women's team that started this win streak, something clicked. And it just feels like this is the team, the way that they're playing, that Vic wants, and it's at the right time because, you know, Vic teams seem to always get hot in March, and we are inching ever closer. So I really like, actually, though they're ranking, you know, as number 14, I like them as a top 10 team right now with the way they're playing, and the right matchup could be another Cinderella run in this tournament, even though this team is young.
They have a run in them for sure. I mean, last year was absolutely an overachievement, so we're excited to see what they can do this year. The offense has only scored 67 points twice in the first 11 conference games, and then scored 78, 73, and 67 in the past three games. Texas 9-5 in conference with four games left. Kansas State on Wednesday, TCU over the weekend, Kansas and Oklahoma State will close things out. Last game in the drum for either basketball teams happening on March 5th against Oklahoma State. Hopefully the ladies can send the drum out with a win. Softball. Kyle, as a parent, the conversation I want to have here is this is very much like the I'm not mad, I'm disappointed conversation. Texas softball, we had high hopes for, and they absolutely just got pantsed in Clearwater this weekend. It's kind of a preview of an NCAA tournament field, and they were absolutely, the pitching specifically, was just absolutely not up for the challenge. Lost 9-2 to Florida State, who's number 5 in the country, 6-2 to number 25 Auburn. Number 3 UCLA was the closest game of the weekend, 2-1. Number 24 UCF outdueled Texas 15-10, and then receiving votes Notre Dame 9-2. Just an absolute murderer's row of really good softball teams, and Texas was not up to the challenge.
Yeah, and look, that UCLA game, they had a SportsCenter top 10 play by UCLA that saved, you know, probably a run in that one, in a one-run game, right? It's close. It's softball is a game of runs and a game of inches, right? Like, I think Auburn got 4 runs in the first inning, got on top of Texas, and you know, that's the difference in the game, right? There was a lot of tough kind of play in this one, but I would say a couple things, right? First of all, let's just not agree to play in any tournaments in Florida again, right? Like, let's get that out. I know the beach is great. Maybe you're distracted. Maybe you're having crab legs. I don't know. But let's just not go to Florida for any more tournaments. I think we can all agree to that. And then second, look, go back to the other sport that plays on the diamond. We already talked about baseball a year ago, and that was a situation where the freeze and some of the other things were a little bit crazy. But you saw Texas baseball just get outmatched, outclassed, and look like it was a humbling experience for that team in the Shriners Invitational in Minute Maid last year. And David Pierce said, you know, burn the film of this. Don't watch it. Don't think about it. That's not us. We're not going to learn anything from this tape. We're a new team. Let's start our season today. And again, they were a couple outs away from a College World Series. So I'm not. Coach White is a great coach. There's a lot of talent on this team. Do they have things they need to fix? Without a doubt. Pitching first amongst them. They need to figure some things out. You know, if Haley Dolcini is going to be able to replicate her success, needs to figure, you know, some things out. If Sophia Simpson's going to be asked as, you know, maybe the best pitcher, freshman pitcher in the country with a lot of expectation on her. But, you know, as a freshman, if she's going to be asked to do that, she's going to have to step up. I mean, got to get Shea O'Leary back to her best form, right? It's some things need to happen with the pitching, no doubt, you know, but, you know, bail your pitching out. They tried UCF when they put up 10 runs, but still lost, but, you know, score some runs, do some other things, get some bats going, you know, win some other ways, play defense, whatever it is. Some things need to change, but there can be a hard reset. There can be a humbling, a mellowing, and, you know, use the time after this, as we saw with Pierce's team, to kind of reset, do that evaluation, and say, we're better than this. We don't accept that this is our level, and we're going to be better.
Yeah, I need Haley Dolcini to just erase this weekend from her memory. She got rocked not once, not twice, but 3 times. Like, just forget this happened, move on, Just pretend the state of Florida doesn't exist, like we probably should anyways, and just keep it moving. Just keep it moving. They've got an opportunity to get things back right this week. They take on North Texas at McCombs Field on Wednesday, and then they're going to host the Texas Classic over the weekend. That'll feature UTSA, Texas State, Arizona State, and Tulsa. Number three, women's tennis. Hard fought 4-3 loss to North Carolina State, who's number four in the country, on Saturday at home. Texas went 1-2 in the ranked singles matches and lost the doubles point, and that's really where things were decided. And again, this is another team that has a shot to make a deep run in the outdoor tennis season. And they've kind of had a early high water mark, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. This was NC State is a really good squad this year. Good in doubles where they got the point. Jada Daniels been really good. She's number 12 in singles right now, and Peyton Stearns beat her. And I just want to take a second to appreciate how good Peyton Stearns has been. She's improved to 11-0 in singles play this year. So even though Texas has had a couple losses, she has yet to be beaten singles, and now has another ranked win to follow up in the indoor nationals, going 3-0 at number one singles in that time, beating the number one player and the number 15 player, now the number 12 player, in the span of 10 days. So Peyton Stearns has been as good as advertised for last year's kind of All-American and tournament MOP. So now it's just a matter of winning some of the down the ballot 2-3-4 singles and giving some help there. They're going to play some good teams. That is on the cards, and they need to just figure that out a little bit. But again, this one could have gone either way.
They've got another chance to get back in the win column. They're headed to Palo Alto to take on number 15 Stanford on Friday. Number 14 men's tennis goes 1-2 at the ITN Indoor National Championship. Beat Florida, which always feels good. Won the doubles point and the singles wins. Micah Braswell, Richard Ciamara, and then the clinch by Pierre Yves Bailey over number three, Ben Shelton. But they fall to TCU for Love and Wake Forest to be knocked out of the tournament.
That's right. Yeah, this was a really tough draw. They got number Florida, who's number five right now, but they were most of the season number one. So that was a big win for them. It's actually a rematch that Florida beat Texas when they were one, and Texas was number three at the beginning of the year. But they fell to TCU in a tough one, and then in the loser's bracket weren't able to get a Wake Forest team that, you know, is solid as well. So it'll be interesting where this team goes, because, oh my gosh, do they have a schedule coming up? They get a week off, but then they take on, in Athens, number 9 Georgia, which is the first of four consecutive top 12 opponents over the next 14 days. Three of those on the road, one of those against the number one team in the nation. And that is a part of a larger stretch of 10 consecutive top 20 opponents. So you'll find out a whole lot about who this Texas men's team is. And I think it's going to be good for them when the tournament rolls around, because they're going to see a lot of their opposition basically over the next 3 or 4 weeks.
We will know by basically April what this Texas team is absolutely made of. Number one, women's track and field. Number three, men's track and field. Set school records and national leading times as they prep for the Big 12 championships coming up. Just a big weekend overall. After her first competition as a Longhorn, Tyra Gittens claimed Big 12 Female Athlete of the Week honors at the Tiger Paw Invitational. Transfer from A&M, that's right, deal with it. Won the high jump with a record of 1.88 meters. That's 6'2", etching her way into Texas history after just one meet. That's the number four performance in school history and a second in the NCAA all year. If you are 6'2" or shorter, she could jump over you. Just deal with it. She could jump over both Kyle and I, regardless of what his license says, and we'd have to deal with it.
There's a 6 in there. It's not 6'2", unfortunately. I just love that, you know, this was in Aggie. She did not win it, but her and Tara Davis were both two of the three finalists for the Bowerman Award. So they basically, Texas took, you know, one of the three best women track athletes in the country last year from A&M. And she's just a grad transfer, so she put her time in an Aggie. But, you know, this is your reward. You get to celebrate. You get to have a nice thing after four what must have been tough years. But there were some other awards or records this weekend or over the past basically week that were shattered, Gerald, including this next one, which, you know, I want you to say, because this is your boy. This is your one of your favorite Texas athletes of the past decade, I'm sure.
It's good to see. If you don't know, my dad is an immigrant to this country, moved here from Barbados, and so did Jonathan Jones. One of them is significantly faster than the other, though. Jonathan Jones won the men's 800-meter dash with an NCAA and Texas program record time of 1 minute 46 seconds and 93 portions of a second. It's a 13-year-old record and set the Barbados national record time. My dad actually somehow found out about this. He's not on the internet really, but he like texted me. Apparently, I guess he got an email from a Barbados newsletter that was talking about Jonathan Jones. Have you heard about this?
Amazing.
Yes, Dad. Listen to my podcast. Appreciate the support.
Amazing. That's incredible. I just always assume that every Bayesian is so proud of Jonathan Jones. I'm glad to hear it confirmed that your father, one of the not, I will say, not the most online human being that I know, is also receiving this from his newsletters of the island. That's beautiful. I'm so happy. That's my favorite thing all night.
Running through the rest of the results, Brooke Jaworski broke the Texas women's 800 record that had stood for 22 years with a time of 2:04:22. Akilia Smith competed in her first collegiate triple jump and broke Terry Turner's 36-year record in the process with a jump of 13:94. That's the third best jump in college this year. The women's 4x4 relay of Stacey Ann Williams, Rasadat Adekele, Da Vincia Patterson and Kennedy Simon recorded the fourth fastest time in program history, which is the second best time in the NCAAs. The men's DMR team of Creighton Carroza, John Moss, Cole Lindhorst, and Cruz Gomez recorded the second fastest time in school history at 9:23:99. Cruz Gomez back again, and Yassine Abdallah broke Yusuf Bisman's mile program record. Gomez actually now holds the Texas record, and then Abdallah is right behind him. And if somebody beat me by 44 hundredths of a second, I would actually fight them. Like, I don't care if we just sprinted a mile. I would take a moment and fight you. It's fine, though. It is what it is.
Not only beat you by that much, but beat you for the school record. You would have had the school record had they not beat you by those 44th of seconds.
It's like a step.
We will now show you how fast a 44th of a second is. There it was. It was done. Big 12 indoor championships will be coming up. All those folks we just mentioned will be competing in Ames, Iowa.
Number 11 women's golf finishes fifth in the opening tournament of the spring season, San Diego State's Lambkin Invitational. 10 ranked teams, including the top ranked team in the country, Stanford. Bentley Cotton tied for sixth in the individuals. Texas will be back on the links next week, a week from Monday, February 28th through March 2nd, at the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Rock me like a wagon wheel. His version is not the best one, but I like to piss Kyle off.
Yeah, I'm going to let him cry if you you keep that up. Gerald, I literally, when I was putting out the notes, I chuckled and I said, I can't wait till Gerald reads that this is the Darius Rucker Intercollegiate. Real quick for the listeners at home, I know we're going long this week. What's your favorite Darius Rucker karaoke song?
Oh, man. Hold My Hand is probably a good one because, like, you can get the audience in it. Like, the last chorus that kind of goes a cappella.
Yeah, Let Her Cry always seems like a good idea till you're singing it and you're just shouting out to the crowd. Let Her Cry, our friend of the show, Mario, and I tried that once at a bar in our hometown, and yeah, it was okay. It was okay.
Oh, man. So in the recently released 2022 Arnold Palmer Cup rankings, Sarah Kusakova is currently eighth. Buyan Park is at 25th. So Texas has two in the top 25. And so the top six golfers from the spring's final rankings from both the U.S. and the international areas will compete in the Cup at the end of the season. Defending national champion rowing, shocking, picked as the preseason number one. But it's the first time to start a season as the top program in the country in school history.
Gerald, they received 19 to 25 possible first place votes. You know who stole them? I'll give you a guess. It's our hated Director's Cup rival,
Stanford.
They're gunning. This might determine the Director's Cup. Rowing might be the differentiator this year. So, I don't know. Get out and cheer on at a regatta when it's in Austin. I've never been to one. I think that would be an amazing thing to watch live.
It would be absolutely fun. Another two sports, though, that may have a lot to say about the Director's Cup final standings. Number one and number two, men's and women's swimming and diving, respectively, going for a conference championship this weekend. We say this weekend starts on Wednesday. So, like, the day after you're hearing this, through the end of the week, Texas will be competing for conference championships in the pool.
All right, Jared, let's do a quick look at the world through burnt orange lenses. I want to start at the All-Star game. Truly a fantastic finish to the All-Star game. LeBron hitting a walk-off in Cleveland. Team Durant lost to Team LeBron in Cleveland. Again, hometown cooking, and Durant was injured, so Team Durant actually did not have their captain playing. He was there in spirit. The other hometown hero, who I might talk about a little bit later, spoiler alert, Jarrett Allen, put up 10 points, 9 rebounds, 2 blocks in the win. He was on Team LeBron, and Jarrett Allen put the clamps at the end of the game on a certain player who dunked on him and went viral, Joel Embiid, and asked him after the game if Allen took it personally, and he said, "Oh yeah, you know, wasn't gonna let him dunk again." Clamped down Joel Embiid, who is I think the leading scorer for the other team in the last like minute, and allowed his team to win. It's an All-Star game, but it matters in like the last 5 minutes that they get really competitive, and LeBron likes to win, especially in Cleveland. So you can thank Longhorn for life, Jarrett Allen. Another news of former Longhorn head coach Charlie Strong, hired to be the linebackers coach at Miami. Gerald, are you worried that Charlie Strong is just going to recruit his pants off and be an elite position coach? Because, I mean, he could do the heck out of those things.
I mean, Charlie Strong, I think, absolutely has an opportunity to rebuild the reputation that was tarnished by his last two stays. I don't know. I think Charlie Strong, there's a good coach in there somewhere, and I think he was hoping Texas was going to have too many head-to-head battles with him.
Speaking of battles that Texas won, four-star 2024 athlete slash defensive back Aaron Bubba Hampton committed in the wee hours of Valentine's Day. I think it was like right around midnight, 12:30. Got the drop on this one. An East Texas kid from Dangerfield. I think he plays receiver and cornerback mainly in his first two seasons there. What are you thinking about Bubba Hampton being our second commit in this 24 class?
I think it's weird that Texas has so many 24 commits when they don't have very many 23 commits. I think that's my biggest conversation piece about. I don't know. 2023 is like the dam is waiting to burst because Arch Manning's going to be the first domino regardless of where he ends up. And then that 23 class fills up pretty quickly, or doesn't fill up pretty quickly. But I think Bubba Hampton is a kid who you're going to have to recruit him wire to wire. Let's just say it like this. Some of the conversation around his commitment. But he's a heck of an athlete, and he's somebody that Texas prioritized. And I think you're able to build around these talented guys, get a couple vocal guys, a couple of guys with good social media skills. We saw that in the 2022 class, and good things can happen.
Blake Gideon is so far the main recruiter on all the commits in this 24 class, and also landed child number two this week. Congrats to Blake and his family. On to guys on the football field, but those who kick the ball, punters, I believe they call some of those. Punter Ryan Bushevsky is in the transfer portal as a grad transfer. This was not an incredible surprise because he did walk on senior day and posted a pair of kind of thank you Texas Instagram or social media posts a couple weeks ago. The surprise came when it seemed like maybe there was another Aussie entering the portal. Gerald, what happened here?
So I don't know where the clerical error happened, but Isaac Pearson was initially in the portal apparently, and then they removed his name from the portal and entered in Ryan Bushevsky. That was like the story. Like, we knew Bushevsky was gone, but like,
right.
And Pearson being like, and again, you and I can say this cause like we've talked to him, we feel kind of friendly with him, like being the nicest person in the world. He just like responded to the tweet and was like, "Nope, I'm not leaving." Like, that was just the way that he refuted it. It was just the nicest, most like Australian thing in the world. He's painfully polite and such a nice guy, but like, it was just it's a very funny sequence of events.
Yeah, he's so chill. He's like, "Nah, mate, just gonna keep kicking here in Austin." That was really bad, Ryan. I know you actually, out of everyone, might actually, Isaac might actually listen to this podcast. So if you are, I apologize. I will not do, come on and teach me how to do a good Aussie accent. But no, so glad he's coming here. I think Gerald and I both had a mini heart attack because we love Pearson, and we're excited. With Dicker gone, it's his time to absolutely shine as the punter from Down Under. So
the most important position battle of the offseason already decided.
That's right. Yeah, and again, keep tuning for your punter news to the Longhorn Republic, your favorite punter's favorite podcast. On to other sports where they kick things. See how I set that segue up before?
Nice.
Yeah, thanks. Soccer featured a bevy of international call-ups this week. Lauren Oliver was called up to the senior national team of Haiti. Lexi Massimo, Trinity Byers, and new transfer Jilly Shimkin will all feature for the U.S. U-20 team in the CONCACAF championships. And Holly Ward will be representing Canada in the same tournament.
Always love seeing the ladies get the call-up.
Absolutely, and a lot of them is nice and spread around. You know, we got a lot of Canadians, a lot of geographic diversity that gives us chances to, you know, one day a whole tournament of Longhorn players from their respective home countries. On to a Longhorn who's just crushing it and making us all proud. Hopefully, you're all following this, and you know where I'm going with this one. Jaskaran Singh advances to the Jeopardy Collegiate Championship. The finals air on Wednesday, and just making all other colleges feel inferior, right? We're usually better than you at athletics, but we're most likely also smarter. So, you know, just good to know. We're also more humble, but good to know we're filling out the full package of brains and brawn.
I feel like we should petition for this to count for the Director's Cup. That's just me. Let's just moving. But now that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and Bang the Drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I hinted at it earlier, but I'm just going to say, dear internet, leave our sweet, sweet boy Jared Allen alone. We have adored him since his afro and monster dunks and block shots and anchoring, which we so desperately could use on this current Texas squad, in the middle of the paint in the Irwin Center. We've loved this man for years. He's gone on to probably a better NBA career than any of us thought was possible, right? Jared Allen, we tweeted out, tongue firmly in cheek, when the blockbuster James Harden trade that took him, the first one that took him from the Rockets to the Nets, we cheekily tweeted that the Cavs had won the James Harden trade because they acquired in that deal Jared Allen from the Nets, who again ironically is just the piece that the Nets are missing right now. The Nets got Harden, the Rockets got Caris LeVert, Kurex and Dante Exum, a couple pick swaps, and I think they got two or three firsts in it as well. The Cavs got Taurean Prince, a guy named Alexander Vezenkov, and Jared Allen. And, you know, it's like, the Texas team is saying that. But, like, Jared Allen is really, really good. And he was really good at the Nets there for a while, and he's really, really good with the Cavs. In fact, I saw a stat for the stat heads that opponents are shooting 15.4% worse when they're less than 6 feet from the basket when Jared Allen is on the floor. He's averaging 16 points, which I don't think people necessarily thought he was a plus 15 points per game guy, and 11 rebounds per game this season. He legitimately could be the reason this Cavs team makes the playoffs, right? So in a hometown all-star game, he made the playoffs. It's great. But that is not why Jared Allen was all over the internet. Jared Allen rolled into not even the premiere part, but one of the early events for All-Star Weekend in what I would call Cleveland casual. the man just signed a $100 million contract. He got the money to buy or wear whatever he wanted, but he showed up in, you know, like a something that probably half of the listeners of this podcast are wearing right now, if they are wearing all of their clothing items. But, you know, a casual kind of shirt, sweatshirt going on, some real casual, I'll call them teacher pants, and some, you know, some casual Vans, right? Look comfortable. Look like he was comfy. For whatever reason, the internet all agreed he was the main character of the day and just decided to bully him relentlessly. And there were some funny memes, admittedly. But Jared Allen responded and said, like, what am I supposed to do? Wear a $5,000 chain? You know? But what I thought of in that moment was I am a lifelong fan of the San Antonio Spurs. I will probably... It's tough if you make to pin me down between David Robinson, Manu Ginobili, and Tim Duncan. But just for what he did for the program and for me personally, Tim Duncan's probably my favorite player of all time. But also, Tim Duncan was so far ahead of his time when normcore was not a thing and Tim was rocking Birkenstocks and kind of European-style JNCO capris. Way before any of those things were even ironically funny cool, Tim Duncan was rolling into San Antonio's big and tall store and asking for what they had on the discount rack, and absolutely was a fashion icon. And I just like to think that Jared Allen is saying, you know, there's a lot of players I could fashion my game after. I could wear a kilt a la Russell Westbrook, but then am I bricking shots? You know, I want to keep my 70% shooting percentage. I want to be dominant on both ends of the floor. Who is he emulating both on and off? Jared Allen in his first All-Star game channeled his inner Tim Duncan. And if I'm the rest of the NBA, instead of laughing, I'm shaking in my boots or my Birkenstocks.
So it's funny that you mentioned that. I had the first viral tweet of my life making a very similar argument. I tweeted out the Tim Duncan jorts and Birkenstocks MVP picture. I was like, how are we talking about Jared Allen not having drip when, like, this is one of the greatest power forwards of all time? But, like...
the greatest. I'm sorry, Joe. The greatest.
No arguments here. But, like... Jared Allen is a kid from Round Rock. Like, what do you expect from him? Like that, like there's just, he's chill. Like, he's very chill. He's not like, doesn't need to put on airs. He knows who he is. Like, I'm totally fine with it. And there was a very endearing moment. This was my favorite Jared Allen moment of the weekend. So he was a reserve. And so all the All-Star starters, like, get to have this big fanfare where they come up on risers and they get to gas themselves up. Jared Allen, being just the perfect pure human he is, asked the facilities and the events crew if they could let him go up on the risers and do that with nobody in the arena. And so it was just like this cool moment of him, like, imagining and realizing like what it could be to be a starter in the All-Star game. And I absolutely would love him forever if I wasn't already signed up to do that. So I'm banging the drum this week on expectations we put on famous people and people in positions of authority and power. And so there have been a couple of incidents in the last couple of weeks where coaches behaved badly. We'll just go and say it based upon the expectations people place on them. A Tech fan was yelling some stuff at Chris Beard. Chris Beard responded, and the kid did the most, like, I'm gonna cuss at my parents after they leave the room thing ever, waited until he walked away and then clapped back and then tried to play the victim on the internet like a doofus. Tech fans were screaming stuff at Texas fans and then clutched their pearls when one of them told them where to do something with another thing on their own body. And again, they played the victim because, well, I can say anything I want to you, and you can't say anything back to me. And then Juwan Howard over the weekend, if you didn't see this, you're not on the internet. But Michigan was playing Wisconsin. The Wisconsin coach called a timeout with 15 seconds left in the game. Juwan Howard took issue with it. The coach grabbed him by the hand in the handshake line to try to tell him something, and Juwan didn't like it. Things escalated, and Juwan mushed that dude, mushed an assistant coach in the face, actually, not even the guy that grabbed him. But there's this weird thing where we expect coaches and players and athletes and people on the internet to react in ways that we wouldn't hold ourselves to, where I'm going to be honest with you, another grown man grabs me and I'm frustrated with something they did, I would absolutely clap back at them. I would probably not mush them in the face, but I would definitely say, take your something hands off me if you want to really talk about this. Like, you don't grab another person. You don't yell profanities and swear words at people and expect them to just let it roll off their back. Like, we treat athletes and coaches like they're not people with feelings. And there's a longer conversation about dweebs on the internet who've never actually had to get punched in the face, like talking like they're tough, and there's a separate conversation there. But like, we treat these people like they're not actual people with actual feelings that live actual lives, or they're entertainment, they're movie characters, and they're not, they're people. And so like and I'm not saying Juwan Howard was right to do what he did. I'm not saying that Chris Beard was right to do what he did. I'm not saying that the Texas players were right to say what they said. All I'm saying is that, like, quit treating athletes and coaches like they're not people. Like, they are people just like you and I. They have feelings, they have emotions, they have bad days. And so, like, be a human being and stop being such a jerk to people on the internet or sitting courtside. Like, stop it. Don't be a jerk. That's all I've got to say.
Yeah, don't be a jerk. It's a great life lesson. But I have two points I want to make about Juwan Howard. One, I learned during this that obviously we always knew two internets existed, the Caucasian and the predominantly African-American or people of color internet. White people didn't realize that Juwan Howard didn't throw a punch. He mushed. I realize white people don't understand about mushing somebody. And that was fun for me. He didn't connect with a closed fist that would be considered a punch. He swung over and mushed a man's face, which, by the way, is 12,000 times more disrespectful. Like, mushing someone is just, it's finishing whatever argument you have. I adored that part of it. So that was fun for me. And second of all, like, I guess a police officer in a position of authority is probably the only other grown man who I would allow to stop me in my, if my momentum and my walking is going one way, and to put their hands and stop me from going that way. Like, I don't know that unless you're wearing some type of badge that gives you a certain authority, and there's another conversation for that, that any other man is not getting a mush in the face if he does that to me, especially one who has just agitated me sufficiently prior. So, okay, I get it. Suspend him. Do whatever you need to Juwan Howard. But like the pearl clutching of like, this man needs to be fired, 12 years show cause, thrown in jail. Like, relax, okay? Oh, just relax.
Were people this mad when Jim Boeheim killed the guy? Like, were people really this mad when Jim Boeheim killed the guy? Like, that happened 2 years ago, and we're not talking about it. Like,
standing ovation his first game back.
Like, yeah, like, 2019, we're like 3 years ago. Like, we are more angry about Juwan Howard mushing a man's face than we were about Jim Boeheim killing a guy. Let's just pause and re-examine our priorities. That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me on the white internet at Kyle Carpenter. Or you can follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer. If you want to follow my other internet account, it's Mushing Daily with all the best internet.
No, it's not.
That doesn't exist yet.
Don't Google Mushing Daily. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. You can shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
I would mush Aggies and Sooners right in their face.